How would your life be different if you had a radio station? What different music would you hear? What different people would be interviewed? What different events would be newsworthy? We created this video to help you grab this historic opportunity to get your voice, values, and culture on the airwaves that you own.
Hello, my name is Janet Lundy.
My name is Kilpatrick Will.
My name is Leland Morello.
Hello, my name is Christopher Maxwell, and I have the honor of leading a group of people calling ourselves the National LPFM Applicants Committee. We exist to help each other get our voices on the air using a new kind of radio station called a low-power FM radio station.
You too can join our effort to bring new voices to the FM dial. Your voice. Low-power FM, also called LPFM, was approved by the Federal Communication Commission, FCC, in February 2000. LPFM stations are specifically designed for new and new local nonprofit organizations with an educational mission to create programming for the rest of us, whose values, culture, news, and music are not aired on existing radio stations. The large broadcasters, represented by the National Association of Broadcasters, or NAB, and National Public Radio, NPR, oppose LPFM stations because they allege LPFM stations will put signals on the air that your radio will not be able to separate from theirs. Their fear is that you will turn on your Walkman or shower radio, and our world music
or techno
or polka music
or civic association talk show will bleed into their station's signal. Their fear is that you will, of course, simply move on to another station, or the internet, or buy a satellite radio receiver, or any one of the other gadgets that download music and news and talk shows to play later. The NAB testified to Congress that allowing LPFM stations would be a disastrous abandonment of strict regulations designed to prevent signals from mixing by competing for your receiver's attention in the guaranteed signal coverage areas. NPR also testified that LPFM stations would destroy the reading services for the blind. There is only one glaring problem with their testimony. If those were going to be problems with LPFM stations, then it would already have been a problem for 30 years. Do you recall any such rancorous debate in the last 30 years? No, of course not. You see, there are already hundreds of radio stations on the air right now that are just as close or even closer together as LPFM stations would be. It is that distance, or buffer space, that is the center of this debate. These existing stations are called short-spaced because they are closer together than the theory recommends in order for your radio to separate the signals. That theory was established by regulations in 1964. In truth, 30 years of experience shows that this is much farther away than is necessary, since your radio will choose whichever one is loudest and simply ignore the other one. This theory has forced stations to park, so to speak, farther apart on the dial than they actually need to. The wasted space for unneeded buffers creates an artificial scarcity of radio stations. This artificial scarcity helps prevent your voice, culture, news, and music from having competing outlets to serve you. We live in a society that has become so reliant on technology for our very survival that now political public policy debates are often disguised as technical debates. Unfortunately, for the public to actually make their voices and wishes heard on such debates, the public must either rely on public interest groups to represent their interests, or the public must be sufficiently educated to enter the debate themselves. This process is time-consuming, but since low-power FM is designed to be grassroots radio, it's our feeling that we must take the time to educate the public on the details of this debate. So you may at times feel that this tape is a technical discussion and say, why should I care about such things? Because while the real fight is political, it is disguised as a technical debate. Remember, knowledge is power. If you understand how they frame the issue, then you can draw your own valid conclusions and fight for your right to have your needs and values considered in the halls of power. So allow me to briefly review the issue. There are two major points of contention. First, the NAB testified to Congress that your receiver would hear both an LPFM station and a full power station, and that it would sound like this. Pretty scary, eh? The congressman certainly thought so. The problem with that testimony is that it was literally made up, manufactured on the spot by a hired scientist, hired by the National Association of Broadcasters. The hired scientist literally played two soundtracks smoothly mixed together in his laptop PC. Your slideshow has a picture of his PC shortly after he completed his testimony, and you can still see the waveforms visible. As the scientist from the United Church of Christ, Dr. Rappaport, who was seen sitting to the right in the picture, said, "That's not how FM works." The meeting was shortly adjourned after that rejoinder. Dr. Rappaport has real-world evidence on his side. We drove for 3 hours to find an area of a few hundred feet along Highway I-495 near the intersection of Highway 50. We recorded this sample of a weak distant station experiencing an incursion of a classic rock tune from a powerful local station. The distant station you hear first, playing the contemporary music, the strumming guitar, is WPLC 94.3 FM at only 2,000 watts, from over 30 miles away in Warrenton, Virginia. The strong classic rock station you hear breaking in is less than 10 miles away in Bethesda. It is ARW 94.7 FM at a power of 20,500 watts. When you listen to this clip, pay attention to the quality of the sound. Do the two signals sound anything like the NAB testimony? Are they smooth like in the studio? Here we go.
Time for Guess That Tune. What classic rock song was that? Just one more time. Notice that the station we're trying to hear is very, very weak to start with. In fact, it sounds so bad, it's probably safe to say that there are very few listeners in that station near that intersection that evening. It's not just because they're so full of static, but they're not playing anything that's unique from other stations in the area. That's probably why no one's storming the doors of the FCC to have that issue resolved between those two stations. And the final question, would you be listening to this distant station anyway? Let's face it, they aren't doing anything unique that would drive people to try very hard to listen to them.
During the debate at the congressional hearings you see in the picture, one of the congressmen kept asking, "What is acceptable interference?" You just heard it, folks. This is acceptable because hardly anyone is listening. No one cares enough to complain. We literally found the worst receiver we could find and had to search for 3 hours to find this brief area of interference that was a few hundred feet in length. Keep in mind that any LPFM stations would be a tiny fraction of the power of the two stations sampled here, and it is doubtful we would even be able to hear an LPFM station at the distances used in this test at all. As evidenced by millions of people struggling to hear tinny-sounding internet radio stations, and thousands of pirate radio stations, what people really want is variety of programming content. As you can hear, the manufactured NAB clip of alleged interference between an LPFM and a classical station just does not sound like a real-world example. It is funny that the NAB felt they had to manufacture such testimony, since there are half a dozen short-spaced stations in the Washington, D.C. area alone. Any congressman could see for himself with his own radio. For example, WAVA 105.1 FM in Northern Virginia is just as close as an LPFM station would be to WQSR 105.7 FM in Maryland. The congressman would be very hard-pressed to find any moment when the two stations caused his radio to have a problem separating the two signals. Let us briefly reinvestigate this whole short-spaced issue again. WAVA 105.1 in Northern Virginia is 41,000 watts. WQSR 105.7 in Catonsville, Maryland is 50,000 watts. They are 43 miles apart. But according to the theory, 43 miles is not enough distance for them to be so close together on the FM dial. Notice we are talking about two kinds of distance measured. FM radio jumps from station to station on the odd-numbered frequencies. 105.1 is three jumps, or three channels, away from 105.7. In radio jargon, this is called a third adjacent station. Let's make an analogy. Suppose the radio stations are parallel parked on a street, and they park that way by pulling in, like a bus does. To prevent the bus from smashing into the cars parked on either side of the stop, there needs to be plenty of room in front and in back of the actual spot where the bus could be. Well, back in 1964, all that buffer space was considered necessary because the old vacuum tube transmitters and receivers would fidget all over the dial like a six-year-old on two cans of Pepsi. Well, some of the kids didn't fidget that much, and to follow the analogy, not all of the driver's stations were that sloppy. Some of them learned how to back into a parking spot that was easily between two other stations. These stations were allowed to continue violating the theoretically necessary spacing requirements because they were already there, and no one was complaining. This continued for 30 years. More stations were added when libertarian federal communication commissions allowed stations to agree to interfere with each other, or when a mountain was in the way and it was proven that the station on the other side of the mountain was just not going to be a problem. The FCC granted what were called waivers of these spacing rules for years, and why not? In 1996, the National Association of Broadcasters themselves argued that their own short-spaced stations on each other's third adjacent frequencies be allowed to remain there. The NAB in 1996 also argued that these hugely powerful stations, such as 22,500-watt WJFK 106.7 FM and 34,000-watt WRQX 107.3 FM, which are almost next door to 29,000-watt WTOP 107.7 FM, be allowed to continue violating the theoretically necessary buffer space rules. Why? Because in the NAB's own words, in the official record, quote,
"The current rules as they relate to these affected stations are in certain instances overly restrictive,"
end quote. The NAB went even another step closer to what is now called anarchy by asking that these stations be allowed greater flexibility of movement to scoot their towers around like chess pieces when they lose their lease on a tower or something. And again, why not?
And again, why not?
The NAB defended this on July 22, 1996, saying that, quote,
"Progress in radio receiver design, in some cases, provides better rejection of second and third adjacent channel interference,"
end quote. Guess what? The FCC agreed.
The FCC agreed.
There are now hundreds of radio stations that are as close or closer than a mere 100-watt LPFM station would be, but at huge power levels. Let's look at just one last example that illustrates this. Northern Virginia's WJFK is at 106.7 on the FM dial with 22,500 watts of power. It is only 9 miles away from WRQX. WRQX is only three parking slots or channels away at 107.3 on the FM dial and broadcasts at 34,000 watts. By contrast, an LPFM station must have at least a 20-mile buffer all around, not including the original spacing between stations, and an LPFM station is only allowed a maximum of 100 watts. Consider the contrast that if WRQX wanted to get on the air today, they would have to get a waiver from the FCC, or they would have to apply under the LPFM rules, which would require that they move almost entirely out of Washington, D.C. altogether, as well as drop their power down 29,000ths, that is 0.0029, the current allowed power level of WRQX.
Put another way, an LPFM station is just 1/15th the power of your hairdryer, but the current WRQX is over 22 times more powerful than that hairdryer. Now really, does it not strain credibility to say that the laws of physics are going to work differently for an LPFM station owned by minority subculture educational nonprofit groups?
If NAB full-power short-space stations can be closer together than an LPFM station would ever be allowed at 340 times an LPFM station's power level and not cause a storm of protest, well, why would we?
Why would we?
They have framed this issue as a purely technical debate, but as you can now probably see, we are only asking that we be allowed to enjoy the same benefits of technology as they are enjoying. If new, digitally tuned receivers allow WJFK and WRQX to coexist, and at dozens of tens of thousands of watts, surely we can coexist with the power of your refrigerator light.
Surely we can coexist with the power of your refrigerator light.
The 14th Amendment of the Constitution says that we all have a right to be treated equally by the laws of the land. The FCC did not give these short space stations a waiver to break the rules just to snub us. The FCC granted those waivers because it seemed like the right thing to do at the time. Experience has proven that the FCC was doing the right thing. By granting those waivers, the FCC allowed hundreds of radio stations to come on the air and present programming other stations might not have. WJFK does excellent talk shows.
WTOP does a lot of news.
WRQX plays some great techno at night.
That would all be missing if the FCC had not allowed them to break the rules that the National Association of Broadcasters accurately argued were overly restrictive, an argument the FCC agreed with. Now, a few years later, the same National Association of Broadcasters want you to believe that the FCC has, quote, abandoned interference standards, end quote. That is not true.
That's not true.
That is not true.
The new LPFM regulations simply allows nonprofit educational institutions to apply for the same variance in rules that were allowed these hundreds of hugely powerful, politically influential, and wealthy short-spaced radio stations. How funny, then, that the NAB is now saying that if we are allowed to do what they do, it will be anarchy.
In a very similar manner, National Public Radio, NPR, is alleging that LPFM stations will cause a destruction of the reading services for the blind. Again, it is a political debate cloaked as if it were a purely technical debate. And once again, if LPFM stations were going to be a problem for the reading services for the blind, then it would have been a problem already for many, many years. This brings us to the second point of contention. Reading services for the blind are carried on what is called a subcarrier channel. Pardon just one more time for a technical description of what we hope can help you understand the issue. Imagine that if we were at a crowded party and that you were trying to follow this narration, or that you would rather listen to one or both of the party animals singing "Row, row, row your boat" behind me, your brain is able to pick out one of those voices and filter out the others. That is exactly what happens with the reading services for the blind. An FM transmitter has generally at least four voices that are singing and speaking all at the same time on the same channel. And the receiver filters out just the voices it needs. Stereo is made up of three voices: the tone that activates the stereo light and circuits. Those stereo circuits then filter out the left and the right channel information that are on two more subcarrier channels, or voices, that get filtered out. That is how many blind people get their reading services, the exact same way that you get two stereo channels out of one radio signal from the subcarrier channels. So anything that harms the subcarrier reading services would also harm the stereo signal. That means that the hundreds of registered short-spaced stations discussed earlier would have trouble existing in stereo. Truth is that the hundreds of short-spaced stations that are just as close together as LPFM stations would be have little or no problem existing in stereo. This indicates that they have no substantial problem with their subcarriers either. NPR also claims that their classical music is especially subject to disruption. We know this is not true from experience. WCPE is a full-time classical radio station that subsists entirely from donations and is based in Raleigh, North Carolina. In 1996, they testified to the FCC that they did not have any problem from a second adjacent station that is short-spaced twice. Furthermore, WCPE is supporting a local non-commercial radio station that wants an increase in power despite also being short-spaced to WCPE. Note that I said second adjacent. That is one less jump on the FM dial or buffer space than is even provided for LPFM stations. Yes, there are existing stations that are much closer together on the FM dial than what would be allowed for LPFM stations. They don't cause trouble, and some even receive support for their power increase from the station next door on the dial. And a high-quality classical radio station at that, which relies on satisfying its only source of income, their listeners.
There are companies that make a lot of money selling information to businesses on those subcarrier channels. Many of them, such as Q Corporation, have voicemail beepers that work worldwide in countries that use a U.S.-style FM transmitter. Q also sends out emails with graphics to fancy web browsing digital beepers over these subcarrier channels. Another example is Command Audio, that sells you a gadget to download certain programs like All Things Considered or Investment Discussion Shows. The programs are stored in a special radio for your car or office, and just like an MP3 player, you play these programs when you have time to hear them. Command Audio is like an MP3 player that downloads its programs through the subcarrier channels of a local FM station. If indeed LPFM or the hundreds of existing hugely powerful short-spaced stations were really causing trouble for subcarrier channels, you would expect that these companies that use subcarrier to make money would be screaming to kill LPFM. No comment either way has been heard from these companies as of this taping. Furthermore, the technical expert who wrote the National Federation of Community Broadcasters comments to the FCC in favor of LPFM is himself just such a subcarrier businessman. That's why NPR's complaints that LPFM will destroy blind reading services are misleading. So as you can see, this is not a technical debate. It is about justice, about everyone getting the same treatment before the law. It is about access and taxation without representation. Will you enjoy the same access and protections for your tax money that they receive?
Now we get to the part of the program where you can apply this new knowledge. The big broadcasters have ganged up to sponsor three bills in the Congress and Senate that would destroy your ability to enjoy an equal opportunity to be heard. Two of these bills are generically referred to as the Broadcast Preservation Acts. The bill number for the Broadcast Preservation Act in the House is H.R. 3439. The bill number for Broadcast Preservation Act in the Senate is S.B. 2068. The latest Senate Broadcast Preservation Act of 2000, now with a new bill number, Senate Bill 3020, is exactly the same wording as the House Bill, H.R. 3439, that was passed by almost, not quite, two-thirds vote in the House a few months ago. Senate Bill 3020 is touted as a quote-unquote compromise that allegedly allows LPFM to proceed while supposedly protecting current broadcasters. But SB 3020, the Broadcast Preservation Act of 2000, would only preserve the double standard that allows huge broadcasters like 41,000-watt WAVA and 34,000-watt WRQX, mentioned earlier, to create space on a packed FM dial of the Washington, D.C. region by using, quote, third adjacent frequencies, end quote, but denies us the same opportunity. Thus, Senate Bill 3020, Broadcast Preservation, would wipe out the vast majority of LPFM applicants inequitably and unconstitutionally, since we are guaranteed by the 14th Amendment of the Constitution equal protection under the law. If we can't use third adjacent frequencies, then WRQX and WAVA have to also come off the air, or they let us on. SB 3020 cuts the number of low-power FM radio stations possible from thousands to dozens, and none in major metropolitan areas. These are bills that must be defeated if your voice is to be heard using low-power FM radio stations. Senate Bill 2068 simply makes LPFM illegal entirely. No LPFM of any kind is allowed under Senate Bill 2068 as of this taping. Senate Bill 3020 denies most LPFM applicants the same rules that big NPR and NAB stations enjoy. Luckily, for those of us who are unheard on the radio dial, President Clinton has stated that he, quote, strongly opposes, end quote, these broadcast preservation acts that would preserve the radio monopoly's denial of your equal protection and access under the law with an LPFM radio station. Clinton supports more community radio. Clinton should hear from you a thank you and a congratulations for standing up for freedom of expression. Make sure the president knows that you understand how the big broadcaster's arguments are full of hot air. Please ask Clinton to follow through on his threat to veto broadcast preservation acts, no matter what bill it's on, even if it's on an appropriations bill, and this would cause the government to be shut down for a few days. Please call, fax, email, follow up with the senators that represent you, Senator Robb and Senator Warner. Ask your senators to vote no on all LPFM bills known as of this taping. And if you find out how your U.S. representative voted a few months ago, if they voted to defeat, that is, if they voted no on H.R. 3439, then thank them for supporting freedom. If your representative voted yes for monopoly by voting yes for H.R. 3439, ask them why. Mention the details of the issue so they realize you know what's really going on. Ask them to reconsider if it comes up for a veto reconsideration to this time vote no on any bill that would restrict the FCC from proceeding with LPFM. Thank you for taking the time to consider this issue and act hopefully in an enlightened self-interest that the founders of the United States expected for its citizenry. And I look forward to hearing you on a low-power FM radio station soon.